volunteers and listeners is being introduced at a Brew Raiser on Friday, May 17th from 7 p.m. until midnight. Come celebrate this special on-tap brew and KGNU with listeners, members, volunteers, and staff as KGNU DJs Deep Rock, Aaron Stereo, and Old Man GG will spin only vinyl from 1978 and beyond. This event is free to attend and open to the public. That's Friday, May 17th from 7 p.m. to midnight at Dooney Street Brewing Company, 2355 West 29th Avenue in Denver. More information at kgnu.org.
On April 26th and 27th, KGNU will be DJing, hosting, and streaming during FOCO MX Festival at Avogadro's Number in Fort Collins on AfterFM.com. If you are missing the festival, fear not, we have you covered. Tune in to AfterFM.com April 26th and 27th from 4 p.m. to midnight each day to hear KGNU DJs and live music from Avogadro's Number at FOCO MX. More information at kgnu.org or afterfm.com.
So fair and handsome, and her beauty stole my heart away. She wore no jewels, no costly diamonds, no paint nor powder. Bonnet with a ribbon on end, and around her shoulders was a Galway shawl. We started walking and started talking until our daddy house came into view, and she said, "Come in, sir, and meet my father, and play to please him the foggy dew." Well, she set me down beside the fire, and I could see our daddy there. He was 6 foot tall, and our mammy smiling, and the kettle boiling. But my mind was all on the Galway shawl. I played the blackboard, stack of barley, and Rodney's glory, and the foggy dew. And she sang each note there like an Irish linnet, while the tears like fountains down her cheeks they. Thank you. all in the morning when I hit the road for sweet Donegal. And she said goodbye, sir, and I hugged and kissed her, but my mind will always be on the Galway shawl. She wore no jewels, no costly diamonds, no paint nor powder, no, none at all. But she wore a bonnet with a ribbon on it, and around her shoulders was the Galway shawl. All around her shoulders was the Galway shawl. Thank you. Charleston in the chill of parlor bar, drinking Mad Dog margaritas and not caring where you are. Here I sit in Dublin, just rolling cigarettes, holding back and choking back the shakes with every breath. So forgive me all my anger, forgive me all my faults. Ain't no need to forgive me for thinking what I thought. I loved you from the get-go, I love you till I die. I love you on the spinning steps till you say goodbye. Now I'm just a poor boy, works my middle name. If money was a reason, then I would not be the same. I'll stand up and be counted, I'll face up to the truth. I'll walk away from trouble, but I can't walk away from me. Oh, give me all my anger, oh, give me all my faults.
Of Stevie Earle singing a song that Guy Clark had originally written called The Dublin Blues. That was from a brand new album that Steve Earle just released called Guy, just G-U-Y, all caps, and a tribute to Guy Clark, Dublin Blues. Before that one, from another new album by Dervish, The Great Irish Songbook, and a lot of traditional Irish tunes, some of them just with Dervish, some of them with guest artists. And if there's time towards the end of the show, I might throw in a Steve Earle version of Galway Shawl off that Great Irish Songbook CD that just got released by Dervish. But what you heard was The Rambling Irishman featuring Kathy Jordan, the female lead singer of Dervish. And then I opened the set tonight with a tune from Derry Farrell's new CD. just released in February, called A Lifetime of Happiness. If you haven't heard of Derry Farrell before, he is one of the newest and maybe best trad singers to come out of Dublin lately. He's got a terrific lilt to his voice. And the new album features a bit more orchestration than his previous albums. And I like it, but I think I preferred him singing a cappella. I don't know, I'm going to have to listen to it some more to see if I can get used to that.
Shultagale is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by The Celtic Connection. The Celtic Connection is a monthly newspaper for all people with an interest in Celtic news, music, language, culture, and tradition. For subscription information, visit CelticConnection.com or call 303-777-0502.
So I'm going to shift gears a bit from the music and play an interview I recorded a couple weeks ago. There is a Kirkan of the Tartan coming up a week from Sunday, and it will be at St. John's Episcopal Cathedral on Capitol Hill in Denver, afternoon of April 28th at 3 p.m., and I recorded an interview with two members of the St. Andrew Society of Colorado, Ian Hughes and Carl Andrews. And we chatted a bit about the Kirkan and what people can expect to see and hear on the 28th at 3 p.m. Good evening. I've got Ian Hughes and Carl Andrews with the St. Andrew Society of Colorado in the studio. We're going to take a few minutes and talk about the Kirkan of the Tartan. So, Ian and Carl, could you each tell me a bit about your Scottish heritage?
My middle name is McKinn, which is the one that was carried by my grandmother on my mother's side, and it's from the Isle of Skye, the McKinnon clan. And that side of the family came from Skye, moved to Yorkshire, and then were identified as English, which I don't claim at all. But my mother was one of those individuals putting cardboard tags on kids in the Blitz of London. And my father ended up being one of the folks that was flying Spitfires for the British at 18 and a half. He's actually from the Anderson clan, and you have to just go up a little bit to Edinburgh, turn left, and you'll find where the family had their roots on Dad's side. So both sides of the family are historically Scottish, and my mum's side's always got all of these little pieces of paper stashed away, which she remembered all of the stories from her grandmother who had left from the Isle of Skye.
How long have you been in Colorado?
We came back to Colorado in 2010 when I retired after 32 years in the Air Force. And came back as Canon to the Ordinary to the Right Reverend Rob O'Neill.
Oh, very good. Ian, how about you?
So I am first-generation Scottish-American. My mom came out here when she was a teen, I think in 76, 77. She grew up in the most southern part of the Argyll region in Dunoon. My history goes back quite a bit as far as that side of it. I just don't know all of it. She knows more than I do. I've always embraced my Scottish heritage, and it's always been a part of my life. And I carry it on a daily basis here in America. And yeah, it's just a part of me and who I am, and that's how I identify.
And what is the St. Andrew Society of Colorado?
St. Andrew Society of Colorado... sometimes when I talk to people, they don't know who St. Andrew is. So when you say St. Andrew Society, they think maybe it's something religious. That's the only place you find saints. That just happens to be the patron saint. So I always tell people it's the Colorado Scottish Society. St. Andrew Society is a society that helps promote Scottish American heritage, the culture, keeping the culture alive, keeping the heritage going, and getting the younger generation involved. And that way we're not losing our roots the way that some things do. So,
how do you go about doing that?
Throughout the year, we do many different fundraisers. We hold Kaylee's, which are basically just Scottish parties, you know. Throw some music and punch at people and they'll come. You know, we hold something pretty much almost every month of the year. We have Highland Teas, we have a spring brunch. We do two formal events a year.
And we get together at pubs during the summer on Friday night, and you show up, and it's all your compatriots, and sometimes you're kilted, and sometimes you're not.
Yeah, the Highland Happy Hour has definitely been the center point of summertime, really. So, and it also gives you a good chance to find all the different pubs around Denver and surrounding area. So,
where can people find information about events and the organization and that sort of thing?
If you go to coloradoscots.com, you'll find anything you want to know, really, about the society. We have a calendar on there. It tells you about all of our events that we do throughout the year, and we definitely post them in advance, or at least we try to. There's contact numbers on there. Being the current secretary of the St. Andrew Society, I get all the contact info emails. So if you're going on the website and you're sending a message, I'm usually the first point of contact for that message. So,
it's a rather extensive website, and it's also got a semi-motto to it, where Scots are a mile high.
And we do not pair that up with the current situation of agriculture in Colorado. Let's just make that clear.
Well, you don't have to, because there is Scotch whiskey.
Aye.
And you can get a mile high at sea level, I suspect. So, talk about the event that's called the Kirkin of the Tartan. What is that? Where did that come from? How did it wind up in Colorado?
Well, I think the easiest way to begin is if you look at Peter Marshall, who was a Scot that was the chaplain to the Senate. And in his time frame in between 1941 is one opinion, and the second one is 1943, one of his sermons, which was specifically addressing the Kirkin of the Tartan, of which he was making a plea specifically to raise funds for the British relief that was going on in the Second World War. And Peter Marshall, just in using those words, sort of set the beginning of the history of it. The legends surrounding the Kirkin are that following the Battle of Culloden, England, in their great support of the Scots, better known as Annihilation, forbid them to wear the tartan. That actually is not true. But out of that came the legend and the myth that the little piece of the tartan was sewn into the cloth and taken every once a year to the church to be blessed so that the Scottish heritage could continue. I think that's sort of a broad sweep of how the beginning. It's more an American-Scottish event than it is from Scotland, because somebody in Scotland will probably look at you cross-eyed and go, "What did you just say?" it has, though, gone the other direction, and that is a number of parishes within Scotland have sort of embraced it, and it has now become part of their own heritage, but understanding that it does not have its roots in the Battle of Culloden in 1770.
Mm-mm. Yeah, the Kirkin was definitely an American-made thing, for sure, but it was nonetheless made by Scottish Americans. You know, Carl was talking about Dr. Peter Marshall, and that's definitely where it came from, but, you know, this was after the fact that he's moved to the U.S. He was, at that time, presiding over New York Avenue Presbyterian.
That's correct.
And so, yeah, no, it's definitely an American-made thing. But I think in the Kirkin Foundation, it wasn't specifically the Battle of Culloden, but there was that English outlaw of tartan. And I think that's where that came from, because during that outlaw, people would have a piece of their tartan with them, not necessarily because of, you know, Culloden, but they would take their tartan with them during church service, and during a certain part of the service, they would basically have it in their hands.
In their hands.
To have that blessing put upon it.
Translate kirk for me.
Church.
Oh, that makes sense. So how did that particular custom, ceremony, tradition wind up in an Episcopal cathedral in Denver? What's the connection between the Episcopal Church in Colorado, or the Episcopal Church in general, and the Scottish?
In 1954, the move came because of the size of the kirking of the tartan to the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. The Episcopal Church has always had an extremely strong relationship with the Church of Scotland. And if you look at the shield of the Episcopal Church, you will see the sign of St. Andrew in the top left corner. The first bishop of the Episcopal Church was consecrated in Scotland because of the requirements at that time frame that the bishop had to take an oath of allegiance to the crown. And so we had just finished fighting the Battle of Independence specifically. That was not quite something that the church really wanted to invest into. But that's a sort of a long roundabout way to say that there's been very long and deep roots within the Episcopal Church and the Church of Scotland. And the current prayer of consecration is modeled specifically after the prayer of consecration of the Church of Scotland, because that was one of their requests when they did that first consecration. Would you please take this back with you and use it?
Hmm. So how did that ceremony land at St. John's Cathedral in Denver?
Well, there was a dean that decided with his Scottish heritage that he'd like to see that event that was taking place in Washington, D.C. to come back to St. John's, the Episcopal Cathedral here. And Dean Fail was that focal point in terms of ensuring that the event took place on an annual basis of the blessing of the tartan, which is not just the blessing of the tartan. It's also, in my mind, a way that those of Scottish heritage can celebrate that heritage and recognize the depth and magnitude of the tartans that surround it, and to recognize and celebrate that heritage in the same moment.
How long has it been going on here in Denver?
By recollection, it's from the 60s, 62, I believe, somewhere in that ballpark.
So when is the event this year?
It is on April 28th. They are holding it in an afternoon service. Usually we do it in the morning, like a 10 o'clock service. But this year they have changed it to, I believe, 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. And the logic for that is that when it was at 10 previously and in the morning, it had got so large that a lot of people were not having the opportunity to even find a place to sit. I mean, there was more than just standing room only. And so the objective from the current dean was to say, okay, we want to keep the opportunities for the Eucharist in the morning, and this is now being tied to Evensong, which is an historic one of the services of the Episcopal Church. And so it'll be at 3 in the afternoon surrounding Evensong.
And what can people expect when they attend that service? Who will be there? What will happen? What role will each of you play?
I think one thing I think is just a dead giveaway. Expect bagpipes. It'll be there. Expect a lot of tartan. A lot of people show up. And, you know, much like people when I was a kid, this is one of those services that some people show up just a couple times a year to church. This is one of those times.
This is going to be one of those.
This is one of those times.
Christmas, Easter, and the Kirken.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we call them C&Es.
Yeah.
But I would definitely expect first and foremost, a beautiful service. St. John's Cathedral is probably one of the most beautiful churches I've ever seen. One of the most beautiful I've ever been in, really. The clergy there, they do a phenomenal job. Everybody does their part. There is an opening procession where everybody involved, as far as the pipe band, we have the clergy procession, we have the St. Andrew Society Council that comes in with that procession, and we find our seats, and I would expect just a really good service overall. I mean, it is just steeped in Scottish heritage, really, or at least the ever wanting of the preservation of Scottish heritage. And you can see that with everybody that shows up. Aside from a festival, probably one of the only times that I see so many people outside of a festival, you know, without a drink in their hand. And that's a good thing to see, you know. I have friends who don't go to church throughout the year at all, and this will be the one time that they go, because it means a lot to them. I'm not saying that they don't believe, but this gives them a chance. That's how strong their ties are with their Scottish heritage, that they feel that it is necessary to be a part of the service itself, because we have tartan bearers who at one point of the service will go up by the altar and will hold out the tartans, and the blessing will be given over the tartans. And you wouldn't believe how many people bring tartans. And we've had everything from just pieces of tartan to tartan scarves. Some people will take off their tartan tie and hand it to us and say, I want this blessed. I don't care how it's done, just bless it. And so it gets done, but it's a great attendance. And like Carl said, there it has grown into such a service that they've had to move. If you've ever been to a Christmas Eve service at St. John's, you'll understand it's about the same. We get the same turnout. Standing room only, people sitting in the narthex, in the foyer, everywhere. You know, it's a great place to be, and it's a great service to go to.
What role will you play in the service, Ian?
This year, I am not sure, to be honest. I might just be a semi-pretty face in the pew. In years before, I've given readings, so I'm not sure this year. I will have to reach out and find out. But usually I just try to help get things coordinated on the back end of it. This year, currently, just kind of helping in the back end, making sure that everything goes smoothly and that everything is the way that it should be.
And how about you, Carl?
Actually, I'm going to be the preacher for the service. I've been asked to assist the cathedral staff in that capacity. That's something that is going to be a lot of fun. I encourage everybody to bring their own pillow, seeing I'm planning on putting them everybody to sleep.
This is.
I would add a few more things about the Kirk, and particularly St. John's, and the aspect of Evensong. Because of the nature of the structure of St. John's, in terms of sound and reverberation, it is probably one of the most phenomenal buildings for a combination of organ and pipes and voice that one can have. So in Evensong, you're going to have the choir doing particular pieces of it, particularly the Magnificat and the Nunc Dimittis and some pieces such as that, if you're familiar with those, which are actually scripturally based. And then there would always be Common Cathedral, where there's a joint effort between the organ and pipes galore, and it's just absolutely stellar in that building. It just echoes and echoes and echoes. Something I look forward to. And of course, in addition to the pipes, there will be drums. That'll add some background to the whole picture.
For those of you who've never been to St. John's Cathedral, it is a Gothic style cathedral with 65-foot high open ceilings located between Clarkson and Washington and 13th and 14th Avenues on Capitol Hill in Denver. And that particular service is going to be held the afternoon of April 28th at 3 p.m. All are welcome to attend with or without full Scottish regalia. And as we sit here in the studio now, looking at the gentleman you've heard speaking, they have on Prince Charlie, black Prince Charlie jackets with vests, silver buttons, and their family tartans. And I've asked them to dress like that so that I can get a picture for an article that will appear in the April edition of the Celtic Connection. So if you have any Scottish heritage and an interest in nourishing that or reconnecting with it, think about attending the Kirkin of the Tartan, St. John's Cathedral, April 28th at 3 p.m. So thanks for listening, Ian and Carl. Thank you for coming into the studio, and look forward to seeing you at the Kirkin.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So that was probably more than you cared to hear about the Kirkin of the Tartan. In the interest of full disclosure, I need to let you know that I am a member of the parish at St. John's Cathedral and have been for many years. One of the highlights of the Kirkin usually is the playing of Highland Cathedral on the cathedral organ, which is it's almost 80 years old. It's a Kimball organ built specifically for the cathedral and finished in 1938. And it has almost 6,000 individual pipes in 96 ranks and powered by a 25 horsepower motor, as restored recently, and just has an incredible sound. But the organ begins playing Highland Cathedral, and then the pipes and drums join in, and it's quite a stirring sound. I don't have a recording of Highland Cathedral from a service, but I do have one played by the Michael Collins Pipe Band, Denver's own Irish pipe band, playing a Scottish tune called Highland Cathedral. And then I'll follow that up with a recording done in the cathedral of the cathedral choir doing Amazing Grace. So I think you'll be able to hear some of the acoustical qualities in the cathedral. So Highland Cathedral followed by Amazing Grace.
Thank you.
Wow. So that gives you a taste of the acoustics inside St. John's Cathedral. As I said in the interview, it has 65-foot high ceilings, and the cathedral itself is made of Indiana limestone, so the interior acoustics are just incredible. Again, that is Sunday, April 28th, 3 p.m., St. John's Cathedral on Capitol Hill. And if you are interested in attending, I suggest going to the St. John Cathedral website and looking for instructions, directions on parking, because it is always a challenge. And with the crowd that's expected for that service, I think it's going to be even more challenging. So, in the remaining few minutes of tonight's show, I'll pick up on a couple of new tunes from Scottish bands, keeping with the Scottish theme. Here is one by a group called Lau, means light, and that jazzy little trio. Well, you'll hear it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Shoal to Gale with your host tonight, Roger Hara. You just heard a tune called, actually a set, Turquoise Girl, The Tree Climber, 12 Weeks and a Day, and Rounding Malin Head by the Anglo-Irish band Fluke, preceded by Riyadh from a new album, Midnight, and Close Down from the Scottish group Lau. It's now 8 p.m., you're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned now for Musica Mundi, hosted by George.
Support comes from Z2 Entertainment, presenting the Gypsy Kings live at the Boulder Theater on July 23rd. Tickets and more information can be found at BoulderTheater.com.
Saw you.